You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. Malicious Google ads for Signal and Telegram are being used to lure the unwary into downloading an info stealer. LV ransomware looks like repurposed R-Evil. A study of the U.S. Defense Industrial Base finds that many smaller firms, particularly ones that specialize in research and development, are vulnerable to ransomware attacks. Rick Howard ponders how we categorize state-sponsored cybercrime. Our guest is Sudhir Kuneru from Zenoti on how data privacy impacts salons and spas. And it's high noon in the Black Sea. Do you know where your warships are? From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Tuesday, June 22nd, 2021. eSentire reports finding spoofed Google ads for the Signal and Telegram messaging apps that induce visitors to download Redline Stealer, information harvesting malware, whose take the criminals subsequently sell in various dark web markets. It's not just Signal and Telegram that are being faked to deliver malicious content. eSentire says others have seen similar activity, pretending to be AnyDesk or Dropbox. In this case, the threat actors use convincingly forged download pages for the apps. Users who attempt to get those apps during their visit will be socially engineered, as eSentire puts it, into downloading and initializing Redline InfoStealer. The hoods behind the scam are willing to invest. eSentire's report says, quote, "The threat actors who launched these malicious campaigns would have had to spend money purchasing Google ads. The cost of these ads depend on many variables, including the popularity of the keyword like Signal, Telegram, Viber, and the willingness of other advertisers to pay for that keyword in their ads. Although we do not know the total amount the cybercriminals spent on the Google ads, we do know that purchasing the keyword Telegram can run 40 cents per click, while the keyword Signal can cost up to $1.40 per click. It's possible that financing for these ad purchases were themselves sourced by earnings from previous malicious campaigns." End quote. So, evidently, it pays to advertise. This is the third campaign eSentire has recently tracked in which the threat actors are abusing Google search results. The two earlier efforts were called Gootloader and Solar Marker. SecureWorks has taken a look at the LV strain of ransomware that's in circulation, and they've concluded that LV is basically just warmed over R-Evil, and not really a distinct strain at all. How LV came to share the same code structure as R-Evil isn't entirely clear. R-Evil's proprietors, whom SecureWorks calls Gold Southfield, and who succeeded the Gandcrab operators at the time of that gang's retirement, or dispersal, or rebranding in the spring of 2019, may have sold it, had it stolen, or traded it with some criminal partner for other considerations. There's no immediate evidence that LV's operators are running their own affiliate program, but SecureWorks thinks it's possible that one is in the offing. The Colonial Pipeline and JBS ransomware incidents raised concerns about two critical infrastructure sectors, and recent reports have suggested that the water and wastewater sector has also come under attack more often than had been thought. This morning, Blue Voyant released a study of the U.S. Defense Industrial Base that concludes that this sector, too, exhibits significant vulnerabilities, particularly among its smaller companies. Half of the 300 small and medium businesses studied were found critically vulnerable to ransomware. 28% fell short of CMMC requirements. Should one of these firms be infected, there's the possibility of disruptions to those supply chains in which the company figures. There's also the possibility that the ransomware could be propagated from the initial victim to partners, prime contractors, and subcontractors. The assumption the attackers seem likely to work from, the Washington Post writes, is that smaller firms are inherently less likely to be well protected against cybercrime than are the bigger outfits in the defense sector. CISA's weekly vulnerability roundup lists 24 high-severity vulnerabilities. 23 of them this past week are Android bugs. And finally, two NATO warships, the Dutch vessel Evertsen and the Royal Navy's HMS Defender, operating in the Black Sea and visiting the Ukrainian port of Odessa, were falsely reported to have moved to disputed waters in the vicinity of the Russian-claimed port of Sevastopol. The USNI News reports that it seems automatic identification system signals were falsified to give the impression that the warships had engaged in what effectively would have been a provocation. In fact, both ships remained in Odessa. Whether the AIS reports were deliberately falsified and by whom, or whether the incident involved some malfunction, how the misreporting occurred remains unclear. Most commercial vessels are required to be equipped with AIS, which is a valuable aid to collision avoidance, among other things. Warships also typically carry AIS, although for security reasons they may turn it off as necessary since their locations are often sensitive. But navies, too, are interested in safe transit. In 2017, for example, following two deadly collisions between U.S. Navy warships and commercial vessels, the U.S. Navy told its ships to turn their AIS on in heavily trafficked waters. So there are several points in the electronic chain at which AIS positions for the two NATO warships in the Black Sea might have been faked. But it seems that both Evertsen and Defender were in Odessa, where they belonged, and had every right to be. Again, how the locations came to be misreported remains, for now, unknown. Those of you landlubbers out there who may decide you're interested in looking at what ships are doing where, you can gratify your curiosity by consulting the AIS aggregation site, Marine Traffic. And all y'all mariners, well, stay safe out there. Whether you're in the Gulf of Odessa, Manila Bay, or practically outside our own windows here on the Chesapeake. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data.
Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business. Third-party risk is top of mind these days, thanks to incidents like the SolarWinds Orion breach. And it's worth considering the broad range of places in our lives where third-party data is stored and shared. Sudhir Kuneru is founder and CEO of Zenoti, a provider of cloud-based software for the beauty and wellness industry. They work with companies like Haircuttery and European Wax Center. Potentially intimate stuff and data worth protecting.
Some of the more organized and larger scale footprint businesses do ask for more information around, you know, their preferences in terms of color, skin care, skin type. Some of them even take a photograph of the person's hair before and after, you know, depending on, you know, well-established brands have these kinds of processes defined and they use all that. And then some of the businesses where they do, you know, spa-related services and all that, there you do need them to, you know, sign a disclosure and, you know, sign a waiver kind of stuff, which, you know, in the event of any challenges. So most spas insist on a waiver of sorts. That's the spectrum of information.
Yeah, it strikes me, too, that there's sort of an intimate relationship you have with the folks who are doing this sort of these sorts of services for you. You know, particularly when we're talking about things like grooming, there could be details there, even just the services rendered, that you want to be kept private.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, even what services a person took is a private information. And many of these, what we think of as salons and spas, go beyond hair itself. They do a lot of skincare treatments. And then nowadays, they are expanding into something called MediSpa, which is like, you know, because it is a profitable segment, which has involves, you know, whether it's Botox or other kinds of regimens kind of thing. So, yeah, they even disclosing who came and what service they took, it would be a liability for them.
And is it your sense that the folks who are running these sorts of organizations, do they have a good understanding of the importance of protecting the privacy of this sort of information?
I would say the well-run and established organizations definitely do, especially if you are running a business which has more than five stores. I think they are, you know, they understand the liability associated with it and are waking up to being very diligent about asking all the right questions and ensuring their software supports these capabilities. And I would say some have even made changes to their software systems as these regulations are getting more prominence in the industry kind of stuff to make sure their software supports it. But I do think the small players, I don't think even know or understand any of it. So many of them run their business on pen and paper or some old school software, which probably is not even compliant from a regulatory perspective. Even for the smaller businesses, actually, the compliance is not very hard to achieve today. It's software solutions, whether it's ours or others, make it super easy for them when they deploy it to say, hey, the customer, their guest should have the flexibility and control to choose, you know, will they opt in, will they opt out, and making sure the business doesn't do any mistake also of saying, hey, accidentally also our systems will not allow a business to go send off a marketing mailer to people when the guest has said no. And it protects the business quite well. I think there's awareness pretty strong in our industry as well. And I think many systems have matured to ensure they're protecting the business overall.
That's Sudhir Koneru from Zenoti.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And joining me once again is Rick Howard. He is the CyberWire's Chief Security Officer and also our Chief Analyst. Rick, always great to have you back.
Thanks, Dave.
So your CSO Perspectives podcast just wrapped season 5 last week. And I have to say, it seems as though you've got some free time on your hands. Because at our program meeting this week, you were mentioning a new trend in terms of nation-state hacking activity, something that you call continuous low-level cyber conflict. So that caught my eye, or my ear, as being an expensive stringing together of words. Questions for you. First of all, how does it feel to have some free time to get caught up? But more importantly, what is this new trend you're talking about?
Well, it's always good to get some breathing room between deadlines and having time to get caught up in on the latest developments. And we were getting ready for the CyberWire's quarterly analyst call, which, by the way, is at the end of the month. You don't want to miss any of that. And that's where we get two smart people and me into a room and discuss the three most impactful news stories from the past 90 days. So I'm going through all these old news stories, right, from the last quarter, and I notice a lot more state-sponsored actors were dipping their toes into cybercrime in various ways.
Now, I don't think it's new news that, you know, North Korea with the Lazarus Hacking Group, they've been conducting cybercrime operations to help fund their espionage operations. Are you saying that we're getting beyond that the situation is evolving?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, here at the CyberWire, we started calling the Lazarus Group's crime activity as the old APT side hustle, right? But and they originated the idea, but the Russians, with their internet research agency, did it to fund their influence operations in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. And the Chinese do it, too, for general purpose funding, like how APT 41 does it. But that's just one way that nation-state hacking groups conduct cybercrime. A slightly different angle than the APT side hustle is the idea of using these very same groups to bring revenue into the country. In my free time here, I stumbled on a podcast made by the BBC. It's called The Lazarus Heist, and it's excellent. But they describe that North Korea is so poor as a country that they use their hacking team to bring in revenue to support, you know, things they need to buy and maintain and things, right? And so that's very interesting. And then we have a completely another category, which I call state-sponsored organized crime, where the government tasks cyber adversary groups within their country with specific target sets, like how the Russian FSB co-opted the ransomware group EvilCorp in order to cause chaos and fear in the West. And then, you know, finally, we have the one longstanding tradition that we all know about, okay, of state-tolerated crime, essentially looking the other way as long as cyber criminals are not attacking their own citizens. And that was one of the things that President Biden and President Putin talked about during this week's summit.
Wow. So I guess when we talk about this changing cyber threat landscape, I mean, these are the kinds of things we're talking about.
Yeah, and it changes fast. It's always changing. That's what I like about it.
Yeah. Well, listen, before I let you go, even though you concluded season 5 of your CSO Perspectives show, We are still publishing Season 1 episodes over on the ad-supported side. And what is on tap for this week?
Yeah, so most of Season 1 was me discussing my first principle strategies. And this week we're talking about something that the entire industry needs to go a lot faster on, and that is DevSecOps. So join in and figure out what we're talking about there.
All right, we will check it out. Rick Howard, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.